RadioInfluence.com.
Let me tell you why you're here.
You have 210 story office buildings.
We just witnessed some kind of.
You don't find a desk.
Secondary.
You don't find a chair.
Follow up explosion on the World Trade Center.
You don't find a telephone.
Some kind of explosion. A lot of smoke come out of the top.
110 stories high. They are no longer there.
The building collapsed to dust. To dust. To dust. To dust. To dust. To dust. To dust.
This is your last chance.
I would ask.
After this, there is no turning back.
Once all the facts are out.
You take the blue pill.
For your understanding.
The story ends.
And for your forgiveness.
You wake up in your bed and believe whatever you want.
Media is the...
You take the red
nervous
pill.
System of a democracy.
You stay in Wonderland.
If it's not functioning well, the democracy can't function.
And I show you how deep the rabbit hole goes.
The democracy can't function.
The red pill.
Take the red pill.
You have to let it all go.
Take the red pill.
Fear.
9/11truth.org.
Doubt.
WhatReallyHappened.com.
You just believe.
WTC7.net.
Free your mind.
Take the red pill.
You know, when I think about doing Dangerous Conversation, I realize it really is like when mom leaves the room. You know, you do terrestrial radio for a long time and you kind of go, man, I really wish I could be able to talk about something. Or your boss goes, no, avoid that topic. Too controversial. We might lose some advertisers. And then the internet shows up, smartens me up, and then also gives me the platform to do this. This is awesome.
Absolutely love it.
Welcome into Out on the Ledge Studios. It is August 31st of 2016, and let's see if you can hear that. Yeah, let me turn the mic. I don't know if you can hear that or not, but that is an absolute downpour. Tropical storm, depression number 99, or whether it, I don't know what it's called. It's still a day away. But we're just getting a ton of rain, and I got the window open. I just love that sound, man. I just love the sound of rain, don't you? I don't know if it's picking it up right. It doesn't sound like it's picking up right in my headphones. It might be because I've got some noise reduction going on. Once you get to a certain level where there's, you know, you don't want noise. Like, I'm actually getting a hum. Where's my hum? There it goes. No, that ain't it. There's it. There's my hum. The hum was coming from I was watching television. Hang on a second, just so there's no hum.
Let me see.
I'm watching Hard Knocks. God, I love Hard Knocks. I mean, A, I love football.
4 weeks ago, Paul McRoberts' stepbrother was murdered.
This would never happen if I was home.
Maybe training camp has helped him cope.
You know who that narrator is? That's the actor, Leif Schreiber. I didn't even realize it was him. I was watching like Hard Knocks a couple years back, and I was like, man, this narrator's pretty good. Who's doing the voiceover? Oh, that's Leif Schreiber, or Shriver, whatever his name is. You've seen him in, Scream. I think I remember him being in Scream, and he's all over TVs. I'm sure he's a, you know, there's like 900,000 CSIs. I'm sure he's on one of those. Can you guys hear that rain?
Let me see here. I can't tell.
Well, I got it. Well, let me see. If I take that, if I bypass that, okay, and then I, let's try this now. Hang on a sec. Not sure. Leif Schreiber narrating Hard Knocks. If you're not a football fan, well, first of all, shame on you. But secondly, it's a great show. It's about the training camp for a specific team coming into that NFL season. And it's, you know, it focuses on some of their superstars. You get to know the coaches. You get to see the breakdowns of how individual coaches work with their players. But you hear about the bubble boys, as they call them, the people that are trying to make a team that aren't guaranteed. And at any given moment, they could be cut. And contrary to a guy who just signed a $40 million, I think, 5 or 6 year deal, is showing them right now. And the storyline fascinates me because that could apply to anybody. That can apply to some insurance agent who tries to move up and there's a glass ceiling because she's, you know, fighting that. Or someone of color who works real, real hard and they're just not sure if they're going to get that promotion when that guy leaves because there's three other people up for it. And there, I think that's the reason I like Hard Knocks. I like Hard Knocks. By the way, we're going to do an abbreviated show tonight. I like Hard Knocks because it shows that. But the downside is, yeah. Hey, get your playbook. Coach wants to see you. Boom. That's like getting a hammer dropped on your head. When they ask you to get your playbook and go see the coach, you know you've been cut. It's like you know you're going to go under the knife and you know your doctors are going to be like have your heart in his hand and everything. But ahead of time, they have to like they have to ease you into it in your mind. So these guys go and they sit down. In this case, it's the Rams this year. It's Jeff Fisher, head coach. And he's so matter-of-factual about it. He's like, yep, we're going to have to cut you. It's been great. Here's some phone numbers and good luck. Boom. Not, hey, man, I think you're a great kid and you know, you're a really good cornerback and, you know, it's really hard for us to have to make these decisions, but, you know, no, it's like, see ya. And that's what it's like for a lot of people. It's certainly what's happened in consolidation of radio. And don't get me wrong, I still think terrestrial has a heartbeat, but I'm going to be cautiously pessimistic when it comes to terrestrial and what it chooses to do. Because right now, most of them are still scared. They know that most people are now way more informed because of the internet. Radio could really be reaching out. Local, hey, by the way, you know, they had an election here in Florida yesterday and a very good solar tax relief for owners of businesses and homes was passed. It's great to see. It's progress. And it's progress about us. It's not progress about some corporation making more money or anybody else, you know, getting another $300 million contract. By the way, did you know that Governor Skeletor down here in Florida, did you know he's heavily invested in mosquito control companies? Did you know that the one of the mosquito control companies that's going to go after that evil Zika virus just happens to be his? Did you know that taxpayer money in the tune to over $100,000 is going to go to them? And yes, the governor says we got to control this Zika. That's the opposite side. Those are the people that benefit. That's what we're used to bitching about and not liking. And by the way, you've got to be hearing that rain, man. It's coming right off the edge of the house. There's just something wonderful about rain. I'm sorry you can't hear. If you can, cool. Hang on a second. Ah. Yeah, Scott, the Zika virus. Just another plain old con right in your face. Lots of people know about it. Nobody ever gets investigated. Nobody goes to jail anymore. Whatever happened to the fucking journalists? The people that used to go, oh, yeah, did you know that Rick Scott? And blah, blah, blah. And then what you do is you follow up the story every day, till you pound it in to the submissive minds of the populace. And finally they go, they get their pitchforks and they get their torches and they say, let's string this motherfucker up. Let's do it. Not anymore. I mean, you watch The Godfather and you watch Bronx Tale and you watch great gangster movies and you realize these guys have a tremendous amount of power and can buy their way out of anything. They can bribe judges. They can bribe juries. They can have police that are on the take. Powerful people seek power because the more power you have, the more power you can get. And Mr. Zika just pulled another con here in the state of Florida. Oh, it's all over the TV stations here locally, and people are talking about it. I'm like, get out of my face with that fucking Zika. Don't you remember Ebola? What happened to that? What happened to SARS? What happened to the bird flu? Every year, millions of people, suckers, line up to go have someone at a CVS or a Walgreens stab them with more shit into their system they don't need. for $29.95 because my TV said the Zika virus can make my head get real big. I already have a big bed, head. I'm a size 8. Heck, can't get much bigger. Won't be able to fit through the fucking door. So we got me a shot. Yeah, it cost $30. Who does that money go to? Frankly, I have no idea. That guy. It's great. You know, I stopped by to CVS the other day. I had to pick up some, you know, I got these molars pulled out, these wisdom teeth. And I've had nothing but problems of my body's ejecting dead pieces of bone from my jawbone that used to be connected to the tooth. And I'm going back for like 3 procedures now. Yeah. So I'm at CVS. What do I have here? This was clindamycin something. Okay, that's the antibiotic. And this is Edodolac. Don't the name of drugs sound like people that would visit from another planet? I am Edodolac from the planet Anti-Inflammatory. So I go into CVS and I get that stuff, or I go through the drive-thru, and they always have these big banners outside like, get your shots now! They're even giving pet shots now! Shots! Let's just keep sticking you with shit and see what happens. You know those zombie movies? I make fun of them all the time. I mean, they're fun to watch and TV shows and all that, but let's face it, you know, come on. But now I'm really starting to believe that, no, we are one chromosomal flip-flop away from some shot. Get your $29.95. Get that. And guess what? Yes, you're going to grow 3 eyeballs on your ass. So the bottom line is, take back the power. These people, take back the people who have the power and go around them. And that's what the Solar Initiative is going to help do, little at a time, baby steps. We can't get all the change we want all at once, because as much as I would love to see the green sector just absolutely blow up big carbon, we do have to have a shift, because there's so much investments and markets. And so it doesn't need to be as gradual as it is. This is rich people that own power lines and high tension power lines and, you know, the infrastructure of a grid of electricity. And we have been their electric slaves forever. You know, go back to Tesla and Edison and what was chosen and why. And then now, you know, here we are with watts and kilowatt hours costing a lot less than they used to, of course. But it still means you're burning natural gas, you're burning coal, and so on and so forth. So I'm really glad to see the solar sector is about to flip on the bird. And one more note on that, net metering. If you put a nice 5-kilowatt array on your house and you're only using 3 kilowatts of electricity every day, that other 2K that you've generated, you sell back to them. It's called net metering. It's awesome. Now, if you're paying 10 cents a watt, a kilowatt hour, then you're probably going to be able to sell it back to them for 5. Okay, so they're going to take your kilowatt hours and sell them back at 10. So they don't mind you putting money back or electricity back into the grid, and they're willing to give you some money for it. But let's face it, they're just taking your product that you've produced, and you've decided not to, you know, you could store it in a Tesla battery in your garage. There are amazing systems popping up every day. But if you choose net metering in the state of Florida, it is legal. Thank you. Good to know. And you could, if you were to produce enough electricity and really conserve what you used in your house, you could get a check every month from them rather than you having to send them money. You'd have a positive balance of money. That is literally taking back the power, of course, but it is also way figuratively about it. People say, God, Ludge, you know, you talk about energy so much, and I go, everything stems from energy. And the more you have, the more prosperous your country, your neighborhood, your cul-de-sac, I don't care, the hut you live in, if you've got some solar panels on it and you have a little refrigerator, you know, you and your sons went out and bowed and arrowed, and you live in Zambia, and you shot a deer with an old school bow and arrow, and you brought it home, you slaughtered it, and now you have a little tiny refrigerator because you have 8 solar panels on top of your hut. Your food lasts longer. Your food obviously is less dangerous. basically what you've done is you've taken the sun's energy that grew the plant, that grew the animal, all right? Now you're taking the sun's energy again and using it to preserve that animal, you know, a tiny microcosm of what taking back the power means. And people go, oh, you know, you're going to have to pay taxes and there's going to be subsidies. And I'm like, you know what? You're still better off now than where you were before you put those solar panels up. It's the same thing with biofuels. Now, as algae is really starting to come into the forefront, there's a lot of vertical growers. There's lots of independent algae farms. There are people coming up every day with processors for that algae oil. In other words, you've got a piece of algae, you squeeze it in a vise. The plant material goes one way, the oil goes another. Then you take that oil and you simulate the planet. You speed it up. Oil is nothing but gooey animal vegetable oil under the ground, but now you're going to heat it and compress it, which is what the earth crust does to it, and it turns to oil. It takes a couple million years. No, not anymore. Now it takes 20 minutes. You send all that algae oil into your compressor heater. The pressure goes way up through the roof. You increase the heat, and you turned that vegetable oil into crude oil. And it comes out the other end with no sulfur in it. Because the old oil in the ground had rotting things that eventually gave off sulfur. So that's why our fuels have sulfur in them, and they're not good. So algae oil has no sulfur. So tell me why algae and or hemp, not its sister plant, but it's another green plant that produces about 700 gallons of oil per acre. That's not a lot compared to algae. Algae can give you 10,000 to 40,000 gallons of vegetable oil per acre per year. So it is the king of the biofuels. Everybody talks about corn and growing too much corn, and you're only going to get this much ethanol because of all the... And you know what? The math doesn't work out for corn. Those people are absolutely right. But stop fucking talking about corn and learn that there's more to biofuels and the green initiative. And the fact that here in the state of Florida, they finally pulled their heads out of their asses and said, yes, we want solar energy in the fucking Sunshine State. What took you so long? Oh, yeah. Well, the same people that owned the nuclear power plant or burned natural gas right up the street here from me off of 84th and St. Pete, there's a power plant and it burns natural gas. It's literally right inside Tampa Bay. And I see those smokestacks and I smell that nasty stink. And I realize that I'm right now, as I'm using this podcast to tell you about that electricity is coming from that plant to here. How's that for going a full cycle? That rain sounds amazing. I wish you could hear it. But now as I drive, and I drive around Tampa Bay, and I right down the street, like four houses across the street from me, there's a big old solar panel display on a guy's roof. He's got it facing in a funky direction, but it's the way his house is lined up, so at least he's getting something. I drove by a place called Valpak. If you haven't seen Valpak, it's I'm sure you've gotten them in the mail. They're based here in Tampa Bay, and you get a bunch of coupons and those. You know, if you don't know what Valpak is, look it up. But massive plant. Well, what do they have? Ooh, I think it's a 100-kilowatt array out there. The people that bring you the fine products of Anheuser-Busch over off of Almerton Road and Starkey, where Great Bay Distribution Center is, you see nothing but beer trucks rolling in all day. That would be like heaven. Like when you die and go to heaven. And you go, wow, I'm just going to sit on this street corner and just watch all of the beer drive by all day. I'll be able to drink it too. Massive solars panels up there, helping with all that refrigeration of their product instead of burning a hydrocarbon. Progress is being made. It's being made in states I didn't even think had a solar initiative. Massachusetts is one of the top five solar states in our country. It's way up there. It's like a postage stamp. Its latitude is far farther north. It's not going to get nearly this direct sunlight that we get here in Florida because we're so much closer to the equator. So the amount of sunlight we get and the intensity of the sunlight we get just puts those small states up there to shame. And as of yesterday, it's going to get a little easier for these cool things to take place. And I'm just real happy. People always want to see progress, but we're not going to see everything change all at once. Unless you have pure revolution, which I doubt you'll ever have. There's too many backup systems to backup systems. I've always said I don't think we'll be able to go through this monolith of control on the planet, but we can choose to go around it. And that's really what that means. If you live on a cul-de-sac, have you and your four neighbors grow your own algae fuels, have a tiny little refinery, and you could turn your algae into your diesel and you could run your lawnmowers on it or something. In other words, you'd keep it local. You would grow or sequester your water or your energy from the sun, or you would do something like that, including grow your own medicines with cannabis, of course, and just not sell it. Don't bargain it. Don't, use it. Just like a farmer would do if he drills a well and he goes, I got to water some plants here. This is under my ground. I'm going to pump some water out. Well, we need to be doing the same thing. And they've made it very, very difficult for us to do that. And Tallahassee here in Florida was a clusterfuck for at least a couple years, because I started getting into solar in 2004 when I started realizing that the wars were about oil. And I started, just researching things like power towers and dish Stirling systems and solar troughs and Stirling motors, Stirling engine. And how many different ways you could take sunlight and convert it directly into electricity. With photovoltaic cells, this is what most people know as a solar panel. That's a PV. It's a PV. And they're getting cheaper, lighter, less expensive to produce, and more efficient. They're just getting better and better. And I think I just posted a meme the other day about another 100,000 jobs in the solar industry in the world in the last year. And it's going to boom. You got to remember, it's only 3%? You look at that pie chart and you see this big, huge chunk natural gas, big, huge chunk still coal. Then you see nuclear, and then you see oil fired, and then you see other. I was pissed when I read that. I was like, there's a whole bunch of others, a whole bunch. And every day that's why I'm so geeked about it. Because to me, I'm not going to live to see the world that I know we can be, but I know it's going to be achieved. I do, because that's where we're headed now. Knowledge is power. The internet is the great equalizer to anybody that wants to control the masses, whether it's some type of religion or some type of so-called economic system or some type of economics, Austrian and Keynesian and. You know what? Those are all systems. Everything's a system, like they say in the movie The Matrix. The question is, if you just... Ooh, nice. Get some good sound effects for the show. I had a nasty thunderstorm roll through here last night. They're all systems. All of them are. Okay, libertarianism is a system. Okay? It's a system that says, I want less of what we currently have. I get it, but it's still a system. So I think the future world will be lots of those systems working together. Not too many. You might have areas of the country that are strictly libertarian. You might have, and you're going to find a happy medium, I think. But you're also going to have people doing it themselves. Now, I'm not talking about you'll be digging your own iron ores and creating your own steel. There will be companies providing that to trickle down to the local levels. But what I mean is the great change that is coming is definitely local. And that's what it's about. Think of all the rain that's falling outside of me right now during this monologue. Just buckets and swimming pools full. And that is life. You could sequester life. And I know everyone's like, Ledge, you can't do it, man. They made it illegal. They're arresting guys. I know. And those stories are always consistently recycling on social media. So-and-so arrested for damming a stream and he didn't have the right permits. But... my girlfriend's got a rain bucket. You can get them at Home Depot. You can buy 10 of them. Doesn't matter. And if that's what you have, then suddenly you're growing your own garden, some vertical growing, which I'm going to be experimenting with this fall. And there's your water supply. You don't even have to tap into the aquifer. You don't even have to pump water out of some pipe in some big city. You're doing it yourself. And every single time... Someone incrementally either provides some of their own electricity or a little bit of it or gets all the way to net metering and sells it back, that is just like, you know, two buckets. They're on a scale. Every time you drop a grain of sand in one, and the change is so minute, it doesn't happen on our timeline. We get frustrated. Fucking country sucks. God damn it. I protest and I do these things and it doesn't make any difference. And I'm like, yes, it does. It just doesn't make it at the difference you want it, at the speed you want it. But believe me, yes. All you're doing, even if you're just planting a seed of doubt in someone's mind by posting something that's truthful, you know that even though they're little blue pilling it every day, they know that something's wrong with 9/11. And too many people talk about it. My uncle talks about it. My gym teacher talked about it. Jeez. No, it was the 19 bad guys. All you got to do is plant that doubt, and you're creating change. I just realized this a couple years ago, and people say, you don't rant as much. I go, because I'm not as pissed. And I'm not as pissed because I do see change taking place. I do. Hey, do you think we'd know anything about the Teflon Don? Remember I was talking about the people earlier that are just like the gangsters, like Hillary? I mean, come on. This woman could probably just pull out a gun, shoot someone in the head live on TV, drop the gun and go, who did that? And she wouldn't get in trouble. This woman's made of Teflon. She's got those Dr. Evil suits on, too. What's with that? Seriously. And, of course, there's this health thing. That's going crazy. Dr. Drew got fired. I don't know. I just think Dr. Drew's a dickhead. He knows cannabis is safe. He makes his money from Big Pharma. Fuck him. Fuck Dr. Drew. But what if Hillary... I mean, think about this. What if she's got a disorder or a mental instability or blood clotting that leads to baby minor strokes? You know, these is what... And she gets in there. She's the president. There's just too many checks and balances before we have missiles, you know, like a big red button, like, you know, the Home Depot or whatever that is on her desk. And she just hits it and the missiles leave. Because back in those missile silos, they're using floppy disks from 1978. How scary is this scenario? It's so fucked up. A couple of years ago, we had people in the Air Force load nuclear missiles on an airplane and not realize they were doing it until after the plane was in the air and went, hey, man, where are the nukes at? They're normally right over. Holy fuck. And now we got a lady who's, she'll be your selected. She will be your president, I guarantee you. And she just has those little twitches and little, you know, like, whoa, what's going on there? You know, nuke Russia. You could just see her like snapping like a parrot and then like bobbing her head around and going, push the button. I'm a little freaked right now by her, to be honest with you. And she's so Teflon. She was like, every time somebody is getting ready to rat her out, they die. And nobody notices. Some people notice and go, yeah, you know, the guy from the DNC was going to go speak to the FBI about how the DNC screwed Bernie Sanders and it could be a big investigation. Two in the back. He drops. They didn't take his wallet. They didn't take his watch. They didn't take his phone. It wasn't a robbery. It was a hit. He literally got hit. Hillary just made a phone call. Yeah. Send Luca Brasi with my condolences. Hillary. Scary. Trump. No. He doesn't scare me. He's like the kid that wasn't good at sports, but had the football. And everybody else had to kiss his ass because it was his football. But he'd always get picked last, and everybody would make him hike the ball. He never got to be a wide receiver or quarterback. And then he'd get pissed off about halfway through it, and he'd take his ball, and he'd go home. That's Trump. Yeah. He's got the leadership skills of a snail. And people say, Ledge, why aren't you mad anymore? And I'm like, because I'm not only much more aware of how things are, I'm accepting of them in the moment, because that's where we are. It's that Zen thing where everything doesn't have to be absolutely the way I want it or you want it by tomorrow. And I think it's a healthy way to do it. Someone was just posting something yesterday about their anger and, you know, there's so many things wrong. And I go, well, you can sit there and focus on everything that's wrong, or you can, you know, take your dog and go for a walk, or, you know, go to the park and throw her a stick and let her fetch it and completely remove yourself from that. And remember, you're walking through your own journey. You're, you know, you're Joe or Tom or Alice or Betty, and you're living your life. And now you're aware. Here we go. Turn the mic. Wait for the big low boom. That was a crappy piece of lightning. You're walking through your life. You're pissed about things. You want things to change. Good for you, first of all. Thank you for being involved and wanting to know more and wanting to unlearn shit and wanting to take the abuse. You know, my brother doesn't talk to me anymore because I smoke cannabis. You know, terrestrial radio kicked me to the curb on any type of ever getting a talk show, ever. Because they're afraid of what I'll say. They don't mind me playing music, and they know I'll behave myself because I have my podcast now. So getting all the way back, bringing it full circle is, you know, when I'm watching Hard Knocks and I'm watching someone get kicked to the curb, it's because, A, you're not good enough to play at that level yet. You got to put more time in. You got to put more dedication in. You got to put more effort in. And you've got to be able to, you've got to be able to fail and realize it's not going to kill you. And you'll be okay. And you don't have to accept failure. You just have to realize it's part of the process. You know, Benjamin Franklin, the inventors, they always say, you know, you have to get something wrong 99 times, and then you get it right the one time. And all the world wants to know about is the one time. Oh, you know, you took these two pieces of steel and you put in, you ran current and it glowed. And it worked in a vacuum of glass and it changes the world. Well, they don't want to hear that. Oh, yeah, it took me 4 years. Cost me a marriage. I had to work so many hours inventing and trying to make a living that I got sick many times. That's the A&E stuff. That's like when you go on Biography with Bill Curtis. I'm Bill Curtis. Today on Biography, he was known as an average or slightly above average rock disc jockey. And then 9/11 took place, and he decided to speak out on public airwaves. His name is Scott Ledger. Tonight on Biography. You get that part. So I think this little pep talk before we get to some 9/11 stuff. Got some George Carlin here I want to play for you. It's not Carlin's Corner, but it's very important. Pick something you're passionate about and stick with it. Okay, if you're passionate about defending your right to own a gun and you're a Second Amendment guy, know the arguments, know it well, respect others. When you disagree with people, don't get into name-calling. Don't cheapen yourself all the way down. I mean, if you're going to bust them once or twice, that's one thing. But the minute it becomes about somebody else, they've won. I've had many discussions about 9/11. And I know how to... Here's the average one. Oh, yeah, Led, you're one of those conspiracy theorists. I go, do you know what that means? Boom. Blank stare. Conspiracy. That means when two or more people agree. Two or more people. All it takes is two people for a conspiracy. Two or more people decide to do something immoral or illegal or both. That's a conspiracy. A theory is an idea with some evidence that might be provable. I might be able to prove that a whole bunch of people conspired to make 9/11 happen, allow it to happen, look the other way when it happened, create gaps in the system to allow it to happen. And then you start looking at the players and the players and the players, and you go, so that's what conspiracy theory means. And that's when they just go, yeah, some of my friends told me about that, and I don't know. You know what? You're not supposed to. It's not your gig. Stay stupid. You're good at it. Stay stupid. So if someone needs to fill out, I'm the guy who questioned things. Well, on the other side of the yin yang is the guy that goes, I don't need to question anything. There's a balance there. And if you're supposed to be that guy, then be that guy. The rest of us will pick up your slack. I say that all the time. And I, you know, there's still the same thing. You know, oh, I bet you believe Elvis is living on the moon, wouldn't you know, blah, 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 blah. Same old, same old. And that, you know why? Because they know you will undress them with an argument and in, maybe even publicly do it in front of other people, and they had better not even fuck with you when it comes to actually discussing the topic. Instead of all the names and, oh, yeah, you're a twofer. You're one of them truthers, yeah. Fuck you. There's another name. Oh, geez, I don't like being lied to. I really do like seeking a good, honest, open, and truthful explanations of things and things that take place. And anytime I feel like I've been lied to, I have a tendency to be a little suspicious and look into things. Finding that whole truth thing. And they make it sound like it's a disease when they come at you. Oh, yeah. Yeah, you're a truther. Yeah, wow. No, I'm just intelligent. And like George Carlin, I don't pretty much believe anything my government tells me anymore. We found out about too many different lies and constructed lies and actual events that weren't nearly what I was told they were. And the reason I was told that was to hate a bunch of people I've never met halfway around the world and fear them so you could go sell a bunch of weapons. And yeah, I want the truth. Thank God I'm a truther. Thank God I'm a truther. A couple days ago, the Pentagon, I don't know who runs the Pentagon, but dude, I want a gig there. I bet you could just like stuff like just big giant wads of money in your pockets and when you walk out of the Pentagon, you know, like you got like 100,000 in bills just coming out of your pants pockets and you're waving by the security guy. See you later, Bill. Hey, Bob, putting on a little weight there. Just people just, how do you lose $6.5 trillion? Let that one sink in. You know, Rumsfeld, the day before 9/11, says, you know, it was over, it was at $2.3 trillion. And then, of course, the people that were counting that money are the ones that got hit in the Pentagon. And that they were working in a place where it had been reinforced. Now, you know, I should play this, bits and pieces of this 9/11 Inside Out. Maybe it will, because we are coming up on the 15th anniversary. There we go.
I'm spinning the mic. Trying to get that thunder boom. Oh, well. Ain't happening.
So, yeah, let me minimize this and let me talk about this for a couple of seconds before I play it. I've been a fan of George Carlin ever since I was in high school. When his albums came out, me and my Catholic family would never... Now, my parents were pretty cool. They, Bad Company, Zeppelin, AC/DC. I'm trying to think of Skinner. I'm trying to think of some of the albums I had that I would play and crank up in my room. And, you know, certainly the rock music wasn't my mom's music, nor my dad's. But they were cool. They realized that my generation had its own music. But there was no fucking way they were going to let me have a George Carlin album. Now, I had some Monty Python records. I had some Firesign Theater stuff. So I did have some comedy albums, but I had the clean stuff, Bill Cosby, Joan Rivers, and no Carlin. But my best friend Craig, who lived right next door, his parents were way hipper than mine, not only into like bands like Chicago, and Craig's mom had pretty good taste in music, if I remember, Average White Band. So I can remember, I mean, isn't it funny how you can remember you'd go over to your friend's house to listen to a specific CD or record because you couldn't have it or your parents wouldn't allow it or... So, George Carlin, I think it was, well, Class Clown, and I'm trying to remember the other early ones that Craig's parents had. So, we get home from school at 2:30, and I'm dropping the needle on Carlin, laughing my ass off, you know, seven dirty words, a lot of the famous bits. And as I got into radio and I moved down the timeline of life, I completely respect not just his content, but his delivery mechanism. Is there'll never be another Carlin. I'm sorry. And he works for himself. Bill Hicks used to say that. He doesn't have to worry about endorsements or losing a client because they work for themselves. People go see them and pay them money. There's no middleman. There's no corporate advertiser, you know, like with banners on the side of the stage when George Carlin comes out. So in many of his bits, he'll skewer everybody from Budweiser or anything. You got to respect that. You're jealous of that amount of freedom to speak openly. But thank God it was left in the hands of this guy. Think about it. I mean, there's been a lot of great comedians, but very few of them push the social agenda or question it or call it out or undermine it. You know, there were, you know, Red Fox was a dirty, quote unquote, dirty comedian, swore a lot, Lenny Bruce, of course. And these guys, Red Fox talked about what it was like being black. But George Carlin was not necessarily the first, because, of course, as you know, if you listen to my show, you know, we really appreciate what Bill Hicks did in his heyday. But Carlin was never afraid of putting some material out there. And even if the crowd booed or didn't like it, doesn't mean it ends up on a special. And what I'm going to play for you has been unreleased. Whole new album coming out. I think what I'm going to do in the next couple of weeks is one of the DC podcasts is we're just going to play the record and come in and out of the bits and have some fun in between them and just kind of debut it. Not play it in its entirety, but I am going to purchase it. You know, he has an estate and a family, and there's no reason why the money shouldn't continue to flow towards George. But he had that uncanny ability to just not care. And if some people say he was grumpy, you know, part of that's the act, of course. Fuck these people. Fuck them, you know, and especially when he got older. But he used to say that about a lot of people when he was young, too. He just didn't care what you thought about him. Because he knew that his intellect, and most importantly, his delivery mechanism, and the essays he turned into performance bits, are legendary. And here's one, I just heard it the other day for the first time, because we are getting close to 9/11, and the 15th anniversary in a couple of, today's 31st, so yeah, in 2 weeks exactly, from tomorrow. Excuse me. The Carlin bit I'm about to play you is from a couple of shows he did in Vegas. I think it's Vegas, pretty sure. And the material was not released because right after he does this show, 9/11 takes place. So, with that being said, I don't know. It's only two and a half. Let me see. Yeah, it's only 2.5. You know what? Forgive me if I do a couple stop and starts here, but I want to share my opinion of this stuff with you guys as well. Here we go.
You don't help the police. When I was a kid and we went to the movies, we rooted against the police and for the crooks, and I still do. I love the crooks. I don't give a shit if they come to my house and kill my entire family. I'm on their side. I'd rather spend 16 hours stuck in an elevator with a couple of crooks than even say hello to a fucking policeman. You don't help the police. They're not on your side. Don't you understand this shit yet? They work for the state. They'll plant fake evidence. They'll put a loaded gun in the hands of an unarmed man they've shot to death. They harass minorities. They brutalize people. They deny people their rights, and they lie about it all in court all the time. They perjure themselves routinely.
Oh, why did it stop? It didn't let me pause. Heavy duty words. Now, of course, I know a couple of cops, and they're great people. They're not the kind of cop that would kick your head in. They're the kind of cop that would try to talk the knife out of your hand or something. They're cool. The two that I know personally, but they also tell me about it. There's plenty of asshole cops. There's plenty of them. Plenty of them. Hang on a second.
Please. but they don't squeal on each other. They're not rats. So take a page from their book, but never, ever help them. And above all, don't plea bargain by turning in a friend. Tell you what, some of you religious people out here, you religious folks, on Judgment Day, when you see God, ask him if you can plea bargain. Ask him if you turn in your family, will he let you into heaven? You know what he'll say? He'll say, go to hell. He'll say, go to hell, you fucking squealing prick.
I just picture, you know, the stereotypical big, long, white hair and beard and a big white robe, and he's holding a big thing. And he's got this gentle look on his face, and then he's just, go to hell, you fucking prick.
Because even God hates a rat. You know what Jesus should have done? He should have beat the shit out of Judas. Just grab him by the beard and beat the shit out of him. Right in front of the other apostles. Make an example out of him. You fucking squealing prick, Judas, you cocksucker. You realize I could turn you into a fucking pillar of salt if I want? Turn you into a fucking monkey. How else I could be a fucking monkey? Where's the money? Where's the fucking $30? Give me the $30. I'm fucking buying beer for the rest of these guys.
It's only one Carlin, man. All right, I'll let him finish up here about 30 seconds.
He didn't fucking rat on me, you prick. But he didn't do that. He didn't do that. You know why? You know why he didn't do that? Because he believed in all this goofy love bullshit. But you notice something else? He did not plea bargain with the Romans. And he didn't squeal on the apostles, you know? He kept his big fucking yap shut, and he took what was coming to him. We can all learn something from Jesus, even if it's not what we're expecting.
I have no idea what that is. There he goes. It's gone.
See plans to protect.
Oh, hang on a second here. We're going to go a little bit through a documentary here. I was only going to do an hour, and then I thought, well, I've got a 30-minute documentary here that does a great job. And what I would like to do, I really don't want to do the whole thing today. So let me just do about half of it. We'll see. We'll see. I am currently looking on a television, and Hurricane Hunter's airplanes are flying into the Gulf of Mexico. This tropical low is starting to get a little bit more of a formation to look like a hurricane. The center of circulation is still kind of, it's getting hit with a lot of upper level wind shear. So it's not going to be real powerful, but if it moves at 5 miles an hour, that's the problem with the slow movers is the rain. It takes them forever to get to you, and you got all that rain they're pumping towards you. Then they're there, then it takes them a while to leave, and by then you got 10 inches of rain and flooding and all kinds of shit going down. Guys say to me a lot, Led, you talk about 9-11 quite a bit. And I go, well, there are two types of people that are going to want to talk to you about 9-11. They're the ones that, quote, want to wake you up. And that is directly related to them holding their breath and hoping that somehow, and I doubt this very much, but somehow we'll actually see a new investigation, an official one. In other words, actually done under the umbrella of our current government or so on. And it's never going to happen. You think Clinton is Teflon? All these guys, Rumsfeld, Kissinger, Wolfowitz, Cheney, all of these guys are Teflon because they're doing what the globalists have told them to do. And that's really what the Middle East is. It is the PNAC document. And they're going to talk about this a little bit here. So the reason I keep talking about it is, recently, I had a friend get in trouble, and I realized a lot of what he told me was lies. And as I moved backwards in the timeline, I realized, well, this was a lie. This was, and I'm moving back and back and back on the timeline of everything he's told me that's gone. So basically, that's when people start doubting either Clinton or anything currently, or maybe they doubt Oklahoma City. Maybe they've seen a noble lie, or maybe, you know, they're one of the people that doubts some of the mass shootings that have happened in our country. Well, the moment that doubt creeps into their mind, they're going to click on something, and that's the beauty of the internet. If you're interested in this video, you might also like, bam. And now suddenly you're looking into the London 7-7 bombings, and the astronomical odds of that actually being able to take place are simply impossible for everything that took place all at the same time. A drill when the actual event both coinciding. Well, maybe not, because yes, our jet fighters were conducting a hijacking drill the morning of 9/11. So there go your odds out the window of, geez, how could we actually have hijackers hijack airplanes at the very same time our fighter jets are simulating that event in the same airspace? What are the odds of that happening? And they're astronomical. And if you don't have to be Jacques Inspector Clisseau. You don't have to be McLeod or who's the other guy? Peter Falk. Yeah, it's just one more question. He's got his eyes, you got that thing going on. Yeah, Columbo. You don't have to be these guys to figure it out that's not a tiny like crack in the dam. That is a hole in the wall that goes, please look into me. So the reason 9/11 stays relevant to me is because of everything that stemmed from it, of course, Iraq and Afghanistan and trillions of dollars of money made and absolute devastation of the Middle East and Syria and Libya to follow. And then you realize that all of this was planned, all of it. And it was written down. I mean, the dumbest detective in the world could go, geez, let's find out about this PNAC thing. Oh, I mean, it starts pretty much right about the same time that the Soviet Union is starting to fall apart, mid-80s, late-80s, and then suddenly there's no more boogeyman, we can't sell weapons anymore. So let's go down the timeline of this nice little documentary. It's simply a narration with pictures. I don't believe there's any video. And it's called 9/11 Inside Out, The Expert Guide to 9/11, and it's only 32 minutes long. I mean, and everything they say here is absolute truth. Of course, it's documented. It's on pieces of paper. So let's check it out. Here we go.
Preserve the executive branch of government. Starting back in the Ford and Nixon administrations were two aspiring White House staff advisors named Dick and Don.
Cheney, Rumsfeld. And Cheney's got a bad comb over.
Worked, among other things, on a highly classified top secret program called Continuity of Government, or COG, which developed government contingency plans to protect and preserve the executive branch of government in the face of any imaginable threat or event. Literally, their job was to sit on these think tanks with a panel of military geniuses and dream up the worst possible doomsday scenarios imaginable, and then gather detailed intelligence on how the mechanisms within government would protect the president and vice president in the event of such scenarios. These scenarios included things like nuclear bombs exploding in the hearts of major U.S. cities, foreign land, air, and sea invasions, domestic terrorism, and airplane hijackings with every imaginable end scenario they could possibly think of. By the time Dick Cheney and Donald Rumsfeld took over the White House in early 2001, they would both possess 3 decades worth of expert knowledge on the entire U.S. defense system, including a large range of defense planning scenarios, as well as the entire repertoire of military and radar defense systems. That type of intelligence would be extremely dangerous if placed in the wrong hands, and there is good reason to believe that it was placed in the wrong hands. Both Dick and Don were also members of another
Dick and Don. It really does. some hand puppets or something. This is where they talk about Dick and Don and PNAC and all these other neocons teaming up with the defense contractors here. In other words, if you want to know what has happened in the Middle East since 9/11, all you have to do is go to the PNAC document, Project for the New American Century. Read it front to back, and you will see this entire thing was planned. About two things. It's about 3 things. Military bases stretching farther around the globe. Of course, those bases are on top or very close to the world's largest oil supplies. And a shit ton of money being made in the weapons industry. The new American century.
Think tank called the Project for the New American Century, or PNAC, which consisted of neoconservatives and military-industrial complex bigwigs. Prior to 9/11, PNAC published a document called Rebuilding America's Defenses, which outlined a 100-year plan of massive military expansion and empire building worldwide. The authors wrote that the process of transformation is likely to be a long one, absent some catastrophic and catalyzing event, like a new Pearl Harbor. In early 2001, this group of well-connected insiders were looking for an event. They understood that the best way to get people to go to war is to convince them that they are under attack and then rally them against a common enemy.
It makes me wonder now, here we are 15 years later, and even I have two types of 9/11 friends. I have the ones that are openly on say, yeah, it's bullshit. You know, it's absolute bullshit. And they're not afraid to post it. They're not afraid to, have it on social media. A piece of popcorn. All right, a sec. Yeah. Basically, for whatever the reasons are, they can say it out loud that 9/11 is bullshit. I know it. And if you don't know it, you're not paying attention. That's one. The other group of people I have that are 9/11 aware can only privately acknowledge it. They can't say it. They can't post it. My father-in-law, oh, my God, there's no way. We'd be written out of the will. And my husband works for him. And everything, and he's a hardcore conservative, and he makes a lot of money, and there's no way, but I know it's bullshit. And that's when I'll say to them is, well, just, you got to do what you got to do, but don't be afraid when push comes to shove later on in the world. If you have to take a stand, I hope you're there. 9/11 won't create any scenario in our country where the word revolution will be wrapped around it. 9/11 is part of the change that can create a revolution in our country. But it's not only the event. It's not only everything that's happened after it. But it's like dropping a seed in the ground and you watch this tree grow and it's the war machine. And on the branches, you know, comes the NSA surveillance. And every time you walk through an airport and five-year-olds are made to pull their pants down. All of that came from that one seed. So that's why it's so vitally important. People say, well, it's 15 years late. I go, yeah, but no. The way the world is today is because of that seed called 9/11. So knowing that it's a lie can explain the last 15 years of geopolitics very easily. And that's what this document does. It reads like a novel. And then we, you know, it might be not such a bad idea to put some air bases on some of that, that oil. And you could just see a bunch of guys sitting in a room smoking big cigars and going, oh, man, I can't wait to drill that oil in Saudi Arabia, baby. Yeah, I mean, you could just see it. These are people carving up the world. That's what PNAC is.
Cold War had ended, so the arms market was flat, and with no real threat or enemy, the military-industrial complex was at an all-time lull. Although the public reacted with shock and fear when 9/11 happened, the reaction in the financial world was much different. It was business as usual, and a lot of industry insiders were actually quite pleased. 15 years later, and trillions have now been made off the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan.
2015 U.S. military budget by major acquisitions. The F-35 Joint Strike Fighter, by the way, which is a complete turd, could end up costing us, taxpayers, $1.5 trillion when it's all said and done. Because it sucks at everything. It's not a good jet fighter. It's not good in close ground support. It's not good as a bomber. It can't do anything well. It is everything subpar. Because they tried to make three different versions of it. Typical fucking government. Because you know what it is? Someone posted on my Facebook page the other day. Ledge, it's really easy to spend somebody else's money. The SSN 774 Virginia submarine. We got one of them new. You need more subs because, you got to update your missiles. The old missiles are for the old subs. Well, we got to have new subs then, too. All right, let's get to it. $6.3 billion. I'm just looking at this chart. And just the F-35 alone. And just all of this is because people are afraid of a culture they know nothing about. except what they've heard on Fox News or MSNBC or CNN. They know it's called a burqa. And I'm not saying that women in that religion, God bless them, good luck, have anything good going for them. I'm not breaking down the religion. I'm breaking down the reason people are afraid is 9-11. I'm 9-11, 9-11. Well, what are you afraid of? Well, 9-11. We can't have another 9-11 here. We got to go over there. We got to kill them over there before they kill us back over here again. 9-11, 9-11, 9-11. No. And it's just like, do you know anything about that day? Do you know that they actually needed 9-11 to take place? So this thing called PNAC, the Project for the New American Century, and all those defense contractors and all those neocons and all those people that made money, not just being in office and getting their salary and being called sir and driven around in bulletproof limos, not just that. They also, oh, yeah, they own Dick Cheney. Yeah, Halliburton. Yeah, $38 billion that fucker made on the blood of other people that you and I have ever never met before.
Dick Cheney's Halliburton alone raked in $69 billion.
$69 billion, dickhead.
Created by 9/11, while Donald Rumsfeld and his friends and business associates made their own fortunes in defense and counterterrorism investments. One of Donald Rumsfeld's business partners, Peter Janssen, ran a company called Amec Construction, which was just nearing the completion of a $258 million refurbishment, including the installation of blast-resistant siding and windows.
Okay, the Pentagon has five sides. One, two, three, four, five. I'm looking for a map. Okay? Now it's got each, of course, has five rings, and then has the big giant courtyard in the middle. It looks like the Chrysler logo. Well, that big contract to toughen up the Pentagon, the only place they did the construction to toughen it up against a terrorist attack is exactly where the plane hit. Now, what are the odds on a five-sided building? Or just diving it into the top of the building or the center of the building, which is a different story, and the maneuver the plane made to do that, or the what we're told is the plane. And in that office, in that area that had sturdier walls, more solid glass, there was a bunch of, well, even though they had military outfits on, they were accountants. They worked for the military, and they were trying to track down $2.3 trillion that Rumsfeld had announced that was missing the day before. And the plane hit them, and most of them died. At least what we're told is the plane. So what we have here is construction done exactly where the plane hit. People that were trying to find the money were working exactly where the plane hit. And, oh, by the way, if you want to get into the physics of it, yes, 80-ton 767 would not have done that type of damage. Would have probably done a lot more than what we saw in the pictures and the videos. So, and of course, oh yeah, the guy who did the construction. How much money he make? How much money?
Wedge 1 of the Pentagon, which just happened to be the same wing that terrorists would attack on 9/11.
Yep.
One of the biggest questions people need to ask about the Pentagon is, how did that plane fly through miles of restricted airspace to strike the most protected building on Earth nearly an hour and a half after the first reported hijack? Well, it turns out that Dick and Don changed the shoot-down policy a few months before 9/11, and then according to Dick Cheney's own documents and timeline from 9/11, he had an active stand-down order in place on Flight 77.
That's a lot of info at first. I want to slow down here. The first part of what he mentions is there used to be, when a plane went errant, there used to be a protocol where the air traffic controller would call the military. The military would scramble two jets, and they'd get up near that plane to find out what was wrong. If you remember the golfer Payne Stewart, there's a story right there that'll prove that. But then you realize that this didn't happen with plane number one. It didn't happen with the second plane. We know those were planes because we have videos of planes hitting the towers. And then suddenly we get into something hit the Pentagon. So we now have three errant aircraft, no jet fighters. And what he's showing me is a picture of Norman Mineta. Norman Mineta, transportation secretary, his testimony contradicts Cheney's. The timeline does not match. And essentially, as the narrator just says, there was a stand-down order for that missile, plane, cruise missile, whatever it was that hit the Pentagon, whatever that was going to be allowed to hit the Pentagon. There was a stand-down order. That's treason right there. Just that is high treason. And it's been proved. And it is actually would hold up in court because it's provable, because Mineta's testimony doesn't, you know, Cheney said he wasn't in the bunker till much later. And Mineta was like, no, he was there very early. He, you know, the plane's 50 miles out. You've probably heard this at least a couple of times. What we have here isn't a failure of communication. What we have here is treason. This is the man in charge, because the president's supposedly incapacitated somewhere. He's landing, he's flying, they don't want the world to know where he's at. So Cheney's in charge, and Cheney's telling, and by the way, they don't even need jet fighters around the Pentagon. They have surface-to-air missiles, tons of them. They pop up right out of the ground, and they're very damn accurate. They're called SAMs, and they surround the Pentagon. They surround Washington, D.C., for God's sakes. You think Washington's going to only have air defenses based in airplanes? Fuck. Come on. So that whatever it was that hit the Pentagon was allowed to get by airplanes and the surface-to-air missiles were never fired as well.
Which prevented a shootdown and thereby enabled the attack on the Pentagon, which otherwise could never have happened. Our defenses would have shot that plane clear out of the sky if the policy to do so hadn't been directly altered by Dick and Don just months before.
Instead of going from point A to point B to point C every time you need to scramble a jet, now you have to go from point A to point D, back to B, over to C, then you can scramble the jet. It was simply they changed the protocol in the middle of the summer of 9/11, so the jets had to have permission from Rumsfeld to do anything. They made it funnel through them. So there weren't just the defense simulation where the jets were up that day facing, chasing phantoms on their radar scopes and basically military drilling for jets. You know, we're up here and we're facing these fake victims or enemies, and we're sighting, oh, missile away. Okay, you get a good job. You know, all right, let's hit. It's they do it all the time. They war game. It's how you stay sharp. Well, okay. But now we have the change in the command that would even contact these guys has been changed by Cheney and Rumsfeld 2 months before 9/11. And by the way, they changed it back right afterwards. These guys should be drawn and quartered, like old school, like Braveheart shit. Unbelievable. You think Hillary's Teflon? Look what these fuckers have done and were part of. I'm not saying they planned it, but I'm saying they did it willingly.
The policy was changed back after 9/11, but the damage was done. Also curious is why terrorists would crash into a non-crucial wing of the Pentagon, which contained an office of the Army named Resource Services Washington, which lost 34 of its 45 employees. Most were civilian accountants, bookkeepers, and budget analysts. This was the very day after Donald Rumsfeld announced that $2.3 trillion had gone missing or stolen from the Pentagon budget. That's right, terrorists just so happened to attack a location in the Pentagon where analysts were working to help track down that missing $2.3 trillion, and the ongoing construction projects in that wing had moved those offices closer to the impact zones. The company that performed the remodeling, AMAC, was also given the contracts to rebuild Wedge 1 of the Pentagon after 9/11, as well as contracts to clean up Ground Zero after 9/11. Even though AMEC employees had been doing construction in that very same wing that morning, surprisingly, no AMEC employees were killed in the attack, which killed 125 Pentagon employees. AMEC was never investigated or even mentioned by the 9/11 Commission, despite raking in well over $500 million in government contracts directly resulting from 9/11. The National Security and Intelligence Establishments also benefited greatly from 9/11, since the USA Patriot Act jump-started the massive expansion of warrantless surveillance, wiretapping, and mass data collection.
You know, it's not that I talk about 9/11, again, 15 years and 2 weeks. You know, I don't know if this is the official show or not. I don't know. But as you can see, who benefits? You know, cue Bono. I mean, if there's a crime, is it a crime of passion? Is it a crime of revenge and anger? Is it a crime about money? Sometimes about all three. But as you can see, people, when you go to the airport and you have to stand in something that gives you low-level radiation and you travel a lot, next thing you know, you got a tumor growing in your neck because you said, okay, yeah, sure, sure, just keep scanning me. I go through these things 8 times a week. Yep, boom, boom, boom. I'm like a slow-cooked turkey. That's 9/11. That's not just 9/11. That's the Patriot Act. And every, you know, Georgia, oh, you know, was the thing about the Patriot Act, don't worry, is because, you know, it has a timeline. And when it runs out, if we don't need it anymore, we're not going to use it anymore. Oh, okay. Well, every president says, yeah. They don't necessarily say they're going to repeal, re-examine. We're going to revisit the Patriot Act, folks. It might be time. Yes, we can. Yes, we scan. Instead of Barack Obama, yes, we can. It says, yes, we scan. So that's not just the airports. Now we know what the NSA, thanks to Snowden, has been up to. This is all 9/11. The seed that drops in the ground that creates all the events that we are now going through on a daily basis that are shutting down our society incrementally, very slowly. Information's being consolidated. Who's telling you things is being consolidated. Who's not telling you what you should hear are being bought out or underfinanced to fail. There was one TV station in Oklahoma City that wasn't going to drop the story about those extra bombs being found in that building and the bomb squads having to come in. In other words, there's no way Timothy McVeigh, acting alone, could have put those bombs in there. And it was a local TV station that was starting to dig up dirt. Fox bottom and buried the story. Happens everywhere in this country. Happens weekly at a newspaper. Happens weekly at a radio station. It definitely happens where some gung-ho TV guy actually wants to do a local report about some... No, no, Billy, we don't need you looking into that. The farming industry needs that hormone in the cow's milk. Happens all the time. And always people say, well you'd think by now, 9/11, you'd have some whistleblowers. There's plenty. There's plenty. FBI, Sybille Edmonds, probably one of the biggest, most intelligent, articulate people to ever visit 60 Minutes and talk about the warnings and everything she was translating weeks before, days before, she knew. There's many people that knew, but most people don't. They, you know, like, screw that, man. I'm like 2 years away from retirement, or I'm not going to get sent back down to the mailroom. I'm not going to speak out. I've got a wife and kid. I got a mom, dad, two mortgages. Fuck you. All right. You know what? I get it. I get it. It's okay. But at least know the truth. You may not ever have to speak out loud about it, but maybe quietly passing it along without risking your world isn't such a bad thing. It's still very satisfying to the soul, I'll let you know that.
Therefore, it would certainly have been in the best interest for the NSA, FBI, CIA, and national security establishments to go along with the official story and not call things into question publicly. Even if they had inside information on an inside job and could expose it if they'd wanted, they'd be risking nearly everything to do so. The same goes for every top official in the chain of command within the military, NORAD, and the FAA, which all coincidentally failed to do their only job on 9/11.
Standdown.net's a good website page when you want to see how miserably, miserably our jet fighters and the communications people. It's so funny. You had 5 or 6 people in various stages of each one, like let's say people at NORAD and then the people at the local hub in between NORAD and let's say the Boston airport. There was a lot of newbies on their first day at work. There were a couple of people that were filling in for people who just happened to take the day off. Isn't it funny how 19 people in caves with knives were able to have all these wonderful coincidences just land in their fucking lap?
All the systems in government that should have been in place to stop something exactly like 9/11 not only failed to work on 9/11, but appear to have been intentionally disabled or used against us by the people in charge of protecting us that day. No one was investigated, fired, or otherwise held accountable for these failures. Some, in fact, received promotions and special honors.
You know why? Can you imagine, like, man, we need a sacrificial lamb here. The people are angry. All right. Richard Clark sort of took one for the team. You know, his famous speech. Actually, I used some of his audio in the intro to the show. George Tenet is being, actually, they're showing George Bush give him a medal. He was head of the CIA at the time. So, yeah, I mean, it's like we got to whack Bobby. If you whack Bobby, you got to whack Al and Joey, too, because they're going to rat you out. Well, what if we didn't kill them? Well, then you're good. In fact, give them all money. Keep them quiet. So that's what we have here. Nobody gets fired. There's Paul Bremer and his big goofy look. Nobody got fired. Not only that, people got promotions. You sucked horribly on 9/11. Congratulations. Here's your new office. I know. Hey, check that desk drawer. There just might be a little something in there.
The head of NORAD on 9/11, Ralph Eberhardt, helped sponsor a series of military exercises codenamed Northern Guardian, Northern Vigilance, and Vigilant Guardian, which served to obstruct Northeast air defenses on 9/11. Eberhardt also appears to have lowered the Infocon or communications defense level just hours before the attacks and gave orders that directly obstructed...
Oops! Did I do that? Oh, man. Did I press the orange button or the red? I was supposed to press the green one, right? Oh, shit. Sorry about that.
The interceptors, sending the last remaining fighter jets far out to sea to fight an imaginary Russian fleet. Eberhardt was an expert on air defense and communication systems. He could have stopped 9/11 in its tracks had he simply done his job that day. But he wasn't alone. Mike Canavan, the FAA hijack coordinator, decided to go on an extended coffee break that morning and was completely missing for hours during the most crucial moments of the attacks.
What do you think he's doing? See, I always think about these people, the people that know something's going down, but they're like, I don't want to be part of it. All right, well, then you're going to need to leave. And you're going to need an alibi or something. But, you know, he's probably sitting, like, in his car listening to the local radio. And he's hearing, like, a plane's hit the World Trade Center. And he realizes that he's part of it. What? Where do you go from there? Because you're not only just... It's like you're involved by your denial and your silence. You're just as bad as anybody who actually physically did something or kept something good from happening. You're just the same person. You need to keep your job. Well, you know, there's going to be something going down Tuesday, September 11th. Really? Yeah, I don't know. I've heard some really bad things. And, you know, you might not want to be here. Fuck you. I'm not sure where you live. I'm not sure how fancy your house is or your government job or your pension. But you know what? Fuck you. You could have changed the lives. You could have changed one or two people just coming forward or saying, no, I'm not going to do it. And I'm not going to take the day off. And that stuff's got to come through me to get over to NORAD. Fuck you. I ain't going to do it. And if you fire me, I'm going to say why I was fired. Where was that guy? All these guys that pledge allegiance and wear uniforms and have patches on their shoulders. Where are you motherfuckers at? All of you. You know it's bullshit. No, man, I got 18 years. I got 2 years. I'm out of here. Screw the American people. I know I put my hand on that religious book and swore to defend the Constitution against all enemies, foreign and, what's that other word? Domestic. But you know what? Took me 4 years to get that stripe right there you see in my arm. I'm not going to risk that by actually being a human being and really being the so-called hoorah motherfucker that I think I am. No, you're not. You're just another cog in the wheel of disgusting disappointment. All of you. anyone who didn't pick up a phone when they knew they should, anybody who decided to take the day off, all of you are culpable. All of you.
Benedict Sliney, a former Wall Street lawyer, was placed in charge of the FAA. His first day on the job was September 11th.
Hey!
As a lawyer, he clearly understood the strength of plausible deniability as a defense strategy, as he and his colleagues all feigned inexperience and surprise as their official excuse for the so-called failures that day.
Threat. No specific threat involving really a domestic operation or involving what happened, obviously. The city's airliner and so.
How long do you think Cheney's pacemaker is going to work? Calling all hackers. Calling all hackers. You need to get on that.
There were no warning signs that I'm aware of that would indicate this type of operation in the country.
CIA covert operations always operate under a blanket of plausible deniability. Intelligence agents use it to cover their tracks at every step of the game. It's a key tactic used in the intelligence community, and it was also used as the official excuse by everyone in charge of protecting us that day.
I don't think anybody could have predicted that they would try to use an airplane as a missile, a hijacked airplane as a missile.
Nobody in our government, at least, and I don't think the prior government that could envision flying airplanes into buildings on such a massive scale.
Whoops. Seeds concept proposal. Amalgam Virgo. Counterterrorism. Everyone participates. I'm looking at the charts right now on the page. There's actual physical paper proof that we were wargaming these scenarios inside the Pentagon, inside the military, months before this thing took place. And you just heard, of course, Condoleezza Rice and W. Completely go, and Cheney. And you go, no, there's no warnings. We didn't know anything.
So was 9/11 a covert operation? Right before 9/11, the entire FBI counterterrorism task force was flown out to Monterey, California for a company retreat. So all of our best agents would be on the other side of the country from the events unfolding in New York and Washington. FBI Director Louis Free left the Bureau shortly before 9/11 to begin a new career in law.
Now, you know that the pipeline of, yep, the big event, it probably had a code name. Do you think it had like a code name? Like, you know, where they could speak, but they would never have to mention what was actually going to happen, the fake terrorism attack, you know, the hijackings, the buildings imploding, and all that stuff. They would just call it, Big Daddy. Hey, how's Big Daddy coming along? Oh, looking good. But there's people that knew what Big Daddy was and wanted to get the fuck out before Big Daddy went down. And that's this guy. That's one of these guys. Well, if you don't want to be part of it and you're getting outside of it, why the fuck can't you talk about it? You know, Pledge Allegiance, standing for the national anthem. You know, people say, oh, this guy ran into a machine gun infested, pulled five bodies out. He's a hero. I mean, you know, we all have a different idea what a hero is. That's what I'm saying. And to me, a hero, all it takes is the backbone to say, I believe I don't want to be part of this for every reason that it's illegal. And it's not what I want to be. And it's not where I want my career to go. Fuck you people, I'm out of here. But no, it's maybe once you enter the politic, they make you fuck a goat and they make sure that they show you they have pictures of it and then they got you by the balls, literally. I don't know. I always wonder about what goes on inside the heads of these weird people. Like Paul Bremer.
One client he would later represent in 2009 was none other than Prince Bandar bin Sultan, the Bush-connected Saudi ambassador who it is now known helped finance several of the 9/11 hijackers in California in early 2001. It appears that there was tampering and...
You think George called him Bandy? That's my boy Bandy over there in Saudi Arabia. Bandy. He's got the bandy on his head, too. Works good.
...complicity within the top levels of the FBI, and former Director Free appears to be a central overseeing figure. According to whistleblowers, the Able Danger Terrorist Tracking Program had become suspicious of the activities of several of the men who would later be identified as the 9/11 hijackers and had raised multiple alarms within the DIA, CIA, and FBI, which were strangely being blocked or purposely ignored by higher-ups within the chain of command. One FBI agent, who was actually the world's leading expert on Osama bin Laden and al-Qaeda at the time, quit his job in disgust and outrage after...
Okay, so he finds out that there's definitely shit going down. That we have these patsies. We've flown them into the country. They're hanging out doing blow with hookers. Those are our patsies. We're going to need patsies. And we have to make sure our patsies don't get arrested because we need our goddamn patsies. You have to have those people. Can't have them all get arrested the day before. So you've got guys like Lieutenant Colonel Anthony Schaefer. He was one of the guys who led Able Danger. And they're finding the trail, breadcrumbs. They're doing detective work. They're going, hey, these guys have visas. How did they get in here? Wow. Oh, look, someone wired them money. Boom, 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 boom. And then when they take it to their higher-ups, the higher-ups say, no, there's nothing going on there. And they did it like 72 times. So what happens? One of the guys who's frustrated and realizes there's crap going on quits his job, and they go, well, wait a minute now. We can get you a better job.
His reports on possible terrorists receiving flight school training in Florida kept being ignored. John O'Neill would later be killed in the 9/11 attacks themselves just 3 weeks after starting a job as head of security at the World Trade Center.
So how'd that phone call go?
What are we going to do about O'Neill? Yeah, I think he might talk. Let's get McKeg. Yeah. All right. I'm going to have him be chief of security up there at the towers. Yeah. And you can cross him off the list of people we need to worry about. Because not only will we just hope the plane hits in his vicinity, we'll put a bomb in his office, too. Just to make sure John's dead.
See, that's how my mind works. Like, when I know some people branched away from this and were very angry, very frustrated, they knew that bullshit was going on. And then, obviously, John, who knew the most about Tim Osman, which was his CIA handle when he helped us form the Mujahideen to fight the Russians in the 80s, all that CIA-Qaeda. So this guy, O'Neill, knew all about Tim Osman or Osama bin Laden. And they didn't want him out and about talking about him. Like, nah, there's no way. You know what? Imagine him, like, surviving that attack and then getting down into some TV station going, no, there's no way. This is too sophisticated. Osama bin Laden. I'm the world's expert on Osama bin Laden, and there's no way he fucking did this. They couldn't have that loose set of lips running around. So he ended up as splinters of bone. Isn't it funny how there's no bodies? And everybody ended up in tiny, tiny little splinters of bone about as big as a sewing needle. Do you know the kinetic energy and force it takes to shatter human bone into small pieces like that and have it end up 600 feet on the roof of another building from a gravity collapse? Sounds like a stream out there by now. It just keeps raining. All right, take me, take me.
A role he was still being trained for at the time.
John, make sure you're in your office 95, floor 96, Tuesday morning for 9/11. We all have a meeting there. I might be running a little late, but make sure you're there by 8:30.
John O'Neill's history within the FBI, particularly his investigations into state-sponsored terrorism, are enough to make anyone suspect that his accidental death in the World Trade Center on 9/11 may have in fact been a murder and a cover-up for what he knew. O'Neill would certainly have had a lot to tell us about bin Laden and al-Qaeda, and whether or not they could have actually pulled this attack off alone, and he was an extremely credible witness. Unfortunately, O'Neill was unaware of everything that was going on inside the towers leading up to the events of 9/11. After the World Trade Center was bombed back in 1993, they needed to assess all the damage and hire contractors to repair the floors and trusses destroyed by the blast. It just so happens that the firm that performed this work, SPC Tridata Corp., was managed by none other than the comptroller of the Pentagon on 9/11, a guy named Dov Zakheim. another PNAC member and well-known intelligence community insider who also, interestingly, did top-secret work on a technology that could take remote control of hijacked commercial airlines by uploading commands to their flight management computers with an augmented series of GPS waypoints that the plane's autopilot could then be forced to follow.
Dougie. Dougie works for a software company that can remotely control jets. When you break down this event, and many people are, that's what I love, is people have passions about different things. Some people like look into the money and the trading, the insider trading and the put options and a lot of other things that are very, very suspicious. And other people just want to talk about the physics of, you know, the collapsing building and the law of conservation of energy and stuff. But then you start to realize how many things had to go right. How many things had to really work well? Well, if you're going to remotely control an airplane, let's say they did, for the sake of argument, well, you're going to need the software to do that. How do you don't just go to the fucking, you know, Radio Shack and go, yeah, I need some software to control a 767. Okay? Everything that had to take place had to have a controller or controllers and had to have a time schedule. When you think about the synchronization of these attacks and how it all played out, remember, these are 19 goat herders with knives living in caves pulling all this shit off. Or let's break it all down like we're doing right now and realize, look how many people, just part of PNAC, Mr. Zach Heim. I remember reading the PNAC names early on in 2004, 2005, and I didn't know who he was. I only knew like Rummy and, you know, the faces I'd seen on TV. And then I later realized who Paul Wolfowitz was. And then I later realized who Richard Perle was. And then later on I realized who Doug Zackheim was. And there's more names here coming up, too. So to say that all of these people organized and planned 9/11, I would say yes. Was it their idea? Was it even higher up the food chain? Was it, you know, the banking systems and the, you know, way up if you go to the top of the power elite corporations and the people who own those corporations and very rich, wealthy people, you know, many people mention very, very rich families. Well, I don't know if that's exactly what they wanted, or I don't know if that's what Bush Sr. wanted and they carried it out. Maybe that was the original plan back in the early 90s. I don't know who wanted it, but I know all the people that are now involved, how they were interestingly connected to something like this, as well as how many people benefit. And that's most important. Terrorists only really benefit when their cause is noticed and people start to empathize for some type of suffering they're going through. That's what creates terrorism. Anything else, they couldn't control the stock market that morning. They couldn't control how much money Larry Silverstein gotten in the insurance settlements for the towers. The only people who benefited from 9/11 are all the people surrounding it, not these 19 so-called terrorists. So when you go to Cue Bono, who benefits from this? Because you don't have to be Sherlock Holmes to see this stuff. You just have to open your mind and go, I've been bullshitted. And now, as I am absorbing all this new information, some of it's a little too much. But guess what? You know what? Yeah, I'm convinced I've been bullshitted.
And once hacked, disable the manual override switch, forcing the plane along any route desired by the comptroller. That technology was active and in place on all four aircraft used on 9/11. Although such technology should have made 9/11 virtually impossible for the hijackers, it could have also been used internally to ensure that everything went according to a different plan. Anyways, in order to address the damage from the 93 bombing, SPC Tridata Corp was given access to all the engineering blueprints for the towers. Around the same time that this was going on, a very curious company named Securecom was given contracts to redesign and upgrade the electronic security systems in the World Trade Center.
We're going to upgrade the security systems in the World Trade Center. That means like running cables and, you know, more cameras and more high tech. We're going to upgrade it. It's going to be even more secure when we're done. Count on it. Who are you going to get to do that? My brother?
Securecom changed its name to Stratasec after it was sued by another company of the same name. Securecom Stratasec, very curiously, held its annual board meetings in suites owned by the Saudi Arabian embassy, And one of its board members happens to have been none other than Marvin Bush, the president's own brother. Stratasec also just happened to have security contracts with United Airlines and Dulles International Airport on 9/11, where Flight 77 into the Pentagon was hijacked out of. At Dulles, Stratasec managed airfield access and electronic badging, as well as the security video system that later provided you...
How much shady information has to hit you in the fucking forehead before you go, oh my God. Oh my God. So they were in charge of Dulles Airport? Oh, they were in charge. They were in charge of the World Trade Center buildings? You know, you feel like Bobcat Goldthwait. I can't do them. I'm not gonna.
Unique and critical evidence implicating the alleged 9/11 hijackers. Why a security company which had contracts with nearly all the different 9/11 crime scenes would hold its annual meetings in offices owned by a country that is now purported to have financed 9/11 is anyone's guess. Stratasec CEO Wirt Dexter Walker III from the Herbert Walker line is a very curious character. No public images exist of the man anywhere on the internet, and his career history appears to consist of jumping from one CIA front company to the next. Aviation General, Glor Forgan, Kuwaiti American Corporation.
Hey, sorry guys. What if he's not real? What if he's just like a fake phantom guy who has like total access to everything? It's like one of the Rothschilds pretending he's somebody, and because there's no physical picture that proves he exists.
Wirt and his wife made pre-9/11 stock purchases, which were flagged by the SEC after 9/11 as suspected insider trading.
Wirt Walker and his wife know 9/11 is going to go down. They want to make money off this. Well, they know that whatever airlines are, quote, hijacked, unquote, and suffer damage, and obviously they're going to suffer in the biggest place you can suffer, and that's the world of popular opinion and people wondering whether they're safe, especially most people are afraid of flying anyway, never mind terrorism and hijackings. So what's going to happen to the stock price for American and United? Duh. It's going to plummet. Well, what if I bet it plummets? It's called a put option. How cold is your soul when you know that you're contacting a stockbroker to bet that two airline stock will plummet because you know people will die and you do nothing about it except be a fucking bush? People at that level, and I don't mean intellectually above us, and I certainly don't mean spiritually above us, but people at that level of power in our world are fucking twisted. Picture you doing that. Picture you picking up the phone, calling a broker and going, yeah, man, there's a bunch of people going to die. I'm not going to say anything about it, but I'm going to make some fucking money off it. Yeah, give me some put options on American and United. Yeah, a couple hundred thou. All right, bye. That really happened. Do you notice where I'm going with the narration of this? Instead of not just... I can't wrap my head around these D-bags. I just can't. I'm trying to figure out where all the good guys are. Because none of them are there. And the few that refuse to partake, Paul O'Neill, dead. Other people fired or persecuted by their very own governments for speaking up or speaking out. Susan Lindau or Colleen Riley, you know, just people that did put their lives and security and jobs on the line. But just the idea that you're going to call your broker and go, yeah, a couple hundred grand on those airlines.
But they apparently never followed through on their investigation. Nor did the 9/11 Commission think to investigate Stratasec. Wirt Walker's activities are similar to two other known CIA operatives, Ted Shackley and Robert Sensi. All three men had unusual business relationships with Kuwaiti royalty and were involved in aviation and security operations. Stratasec corporate operating officer Barry W. McDaniel was a former material arms distributor for the Army Corps of Engineers. He also has black ops on his resume through his affiliation with Sears World Trade, the Vinyl Corporation, and BDM International with Frank Carlucci of the Carlyle Group, an investment firm heavily tied to the military-industrial complex. Frank Carlucci also worked closely with...
Hey! Now that guy sounds like a mobster. There you go. Frank Carlucci. He's getting old, though. I'm looking at a picture of him standing next to Kissinger, and Kissinger looks good next to him.
...to Dick Cheney and Donald Rumsfeld back in the Ford and Nixon administrations, and was an old-school State Department black ops guy. After 9/11, McDaniel would start a police state supply company with Dick Cheney's old business partner, Bruce Bradley. Stratasec also managed badging and video surveillance at the World Trade Center from 1993 all the way to 2001, almost a decade of unrestricted security access to those buildings. In May of 2001, the Port Authority...
And that, of course, you know, okay, if the buildings were imploded, how did this stuff get in there? Oh, there was, you know, a couple workers in the building talked about the memo that there's going to be a power down over the weekend. You got to shut all your computers down. They're going to shut all the electricity off in the entire building to upgrade some cables. Well, when you got no electricity, you have no security cameras operating either. And you can, there's many, 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 many opportunities for them to load some type of nanothermite explosives into those buildings, because there's certainly plenty of nanothermite in the debris dust. So we know they at least use that. They might have used more conventional C2 and other things as well. I'm not sure. I don't remember anybody talking about finding the residue. Did I call it C2? Hadn't grown up yet. C4.
Of New York and New Jersey, which technically owned the World Trade Center complex, lost a 10-year court battle with its insurance companies, leaving it to fund a $1 billion asbestos removal project with money it didn't have. 2 months later, real estate tycoon Larry Silverstein, for some reason, decided to purchase the aging liabilities and promptly insure them for billions of dollars, just in case of total destruction by terrorists.
Months before... These buildings are losing money, by the way. Back in the early 70s when they were built, they were cool. But they were difficult to heat. The air, they were sealed rooms, so I mean, just everything. And a lot of people had actually moved out after the first bombing in 93. So they didn't have as many tenants, and of course they had asbestos in 60% of one of the buildings. Remember, asbestos causes cancer. So just to remove the asbestos... The estimates were about $800 million just to remove it. So you've got two aging buildings. Now, they're iconic in their skyline, but as a building and a building that people want to live in or rent or have their businesses located, the World Trade Centers were actually doing horrible business. And people had talked about, you know, buying them and razzing them, and it's just the idea of, you know, imploding these two buildings would cost billions of dollars, and who knows. So... Why would anybody invest in these two giant albatrosses weeks before 9/11 and then insure them for billions just in case there's a terrorist attack? He made almost $4 billion. He invested, I think it was $150 million. Nothing to see here. Please move along. They call him Lucky Larry. It's his nickname.
9/11 happened just 6 weeks later, and Silverstein was awarded a $9.2 billion settlement, which more than compensated him for the loss of his buildings. At 8:46 a.m., American Airlines Flight 11 slams into Martian McLennan's secure computer room on the 93rd floor of the North Tower. One of Marsh's executives, L. Paul Bremer, happens to be chairman of the National Commission on Terrorism, an old-school neocon and former Kissinger aide who worked alongside Dick and Don back in the Ford administration. Bremer, for some reason, decides to skip work in the towers that day to visit an MSNBC television studio, where he is the first person ever to begin pointing the finger directly at Osama bin Laden and Iraq, calling for
the most severe military response we can come up with.
After 9/11, Bremer would become the Iraq occupation governor, literally Saddam Hussein's...
You know the guy that at work or the woman at work who just completely kisses ass and will suck dick all the way to the top? Yeah, that's this guy. I'll just, you know, put me in charge. Yeah, I'm going to take the day off from going into the buildings, and I'm going to go over to an NBC studio just in case a plane hits one of them. Ooh, there's another plane. Ooh, it fell down and went boom. Hey, I'm here to talk about it. How's that for a convenience? First got to spit this Osama bin Laden name out and get it in the echo chamber of what we call the 24-hour news cycle. This douchebag.
Placement in Iraq and one of the prime architects of the Iraq War. Bremer also sat on the board of the Komatsu Dresser Mining Division back in the late 90s when it developed a thermite plasma charge which could, quote, demolish steel and concrete structures with high efficiency without secondary problems due to noise and dust. Dresser merged with Halliburton in 1998. Bremer also sat on the board of International Paint Company's management firm, AkzoNobel, which developed a spray-on fireproofing insulation for skyscrapers called Interchar. In the years leading up to 9/11, several of the floors in the area of the impacts were renovated and remodeled, and many received complete fireproofing upgrades. Forensic evidence of thermite was found and confirmed by multiple scientists using uncontaminated World Trade Center dust samples, and extreme persistent heat levels were reported by the FDNY and World Trade Center cleanup crews. All strong evidence that high-temperature accelerants, such as thermite, were used to assist in the destruction of the towers. The government even suppressed original news videos of the New York Fire Department making multiple reports of large explosions and secondary devices inside the towers on 9/11, as well as videos of the cleanup operation where a red-hot smoldering pile of fused steel and concrete burned underground for 3 entire months.
The only way that you'll have that kind of underground fire is you need accelerants, things that can burn, and oxygen, a flow of oxygen. Can't have an underground fire unless there's a tube or something. Now, I'm not saying that these pits weren't connected to tunnels and those tunnels weren't connected. So I'm sure that under the ground and through the sewer systems, you did have air flowing under the ground. So when you have a fire that's burning at 2,000 degrees, do you know how much oxygen that thing eats? It creates a wind tunnel. If you've ever stood next to a big forge that's burning like coal and, you know, like a big where they'll melt and you're standing next to it, like a Ren Festival, you go to a Renaissance Festival and you'll feel the wind rushing by you going in and feeding that fire. That's how much oxygen it burns. That's the point I'm making. So you have an underground fire. You don't have a ton of oxygen. It's not just like sitting there in the open sky. So where's all this oxygen coming from? And how are these temperatures achieved? And how is the steel fusing with concrete, melting with everything else, and just turning into a big, giant, melted, together lump? Where is heat coming from to produce this fire that lasts underground for 3 months? Well, when you use a lot of nanothermite, not all of it's going to blow up. Okay? Some of it's going to be dust. And it's going to fall straight down, all the way down. And now, remember, this is a chemical. This isn't some like dust. This isn't like you scraping a piece of plaster on your wall and plastered. This isn't that kind of dust. This is a chemical dust of iron oxides and aluminum. The aluminum has the oxygen in it, and it ignites and creates tremendous heat. Well, the only way you're going to have that tremendous heat underground for 3 fucking months is to have it fed by probably metric tons of nanothermite dust that didn't go off in the original blast. So it was the fuel for that underground fire for 3 months.
And firefighters reported flowing steel like you were in a foundry. Then in 2009, scientists found the smoking gun by analyzing samples of World Trade Center dust that had been preserved since 9/11 and found that the dust contained tiny flakes of unreacted thermitic material, as well as a large number of iron-rich microspheres or after-products of a thermite reaction. Multiple labs have now confirmed it. It was definitely there, it wasn't natural, and it didn't get there by accident. The debris pile also displayed evidence of high-order damage, which, under the National Fire Protection Act, required officials to test for the use of explosives or incendiaries. Surprisingly, this was never done.
You know, that is one of the
the things I think that, you know, the people that want to debunk someone like me, and they'll say, well, no, NIST, you know, they investigated all this. And I go, no, NIST never tested for explosives. Three buildings collapsed into a pile of dust within a, let me see, eight, nine, two and a half, five, roughly a seven, maybe 7.5 hour period. If you add up the total stories, you have two 110 story buildings, so that's 220 stories. And then you get over to building seven, that had 47 stories. So you got about 167 some of stories of building collapse into dust, and you didn't test for fucking explosives. So when you say, when people come up to you and go, no, they tested, there wasn't, no, they never tested to see if there was nanothermite or C4 residue or C2. Maybe it was C2. Maybe I've invented a new incendiary.
As the FBI, FEMA, and other federal agencies claimed control over the crime scene and began shipping all the debris to a landfill off of New Jersey, where it could be sorted and scrubbed clean before analysis and storage.
Okay. You have the world's biggest crime scene. We don't know how these people died. We do know they died in this building, and we know these buildings collapsed, but that's all we know right now. So let's just examine the crime scene. Nope. Let's remove all of it, take it to a landfill, break it into a bunch of pieces, wash it, scrub it. These guys wearing hazmat suits with brushes that are scrubbing piles of steel in New Jersey. That is literally a physical picture of tampering with evidence. That's exactly what I'm looking at right now. And people go, oh, I don't understand how you can doubt 9/11.
Although normally the FBI would take great care to preserve a crime scene and collect as much evidence as possible with minimal disturbances, the exact opposite happened with 9/11. Everything was cleaned up and destroyed as fast as possible. The frantic search for survivors and bodies proved to be the perfect cover, even though they stopped finding people alive after only the first few hours. William Rodriguez, the last man out, only survived because he dove beneath a fire truck as the towers collapsed. Toxic dust clouds filled the Manhattan skyline and were picked up on satellite images from space. The damage seen on 9/11 was so massive, it's hardly fathomable that two airplanes could have caused that much devastation. The Twin Towers had 47 core box columns in the center of the floor plan, which carried nearly the entire structural load of the buildings. All the stairwells and elevator shafts were also located in and around these columns, which, once inside the elevator shafts, one would have complete total access to the entire core of the buildings. With all the unoccupied floors in the towers, it would have been a cinch to covertly rig the Twin Towers with explosives once inside those elevator shafts. Around the same time Stratasec took over security at the World Trade Center in 1994, Ace Elevator Company won contracts at the World Trade Center over the larger and more well-known Otis.
Isn't it great? When you just, what was it I was watching? Oh, Denzel Washington, he's a gangster. He sells heroin. Russell Crowe. And they have their typical whiteboard, you know, like where we would stick pins. And they have Don Corleone, they have his picture at the top, and then they go to Michael, and then they go to Sonny, and they go like, and they break it down. And it's like the power pyramid, if you will. Well, there's a power pyramid for 9/11. I'm not sure who's exactly all the way at the top. But if you had the Israeli Mossad, their CIA, if you will, same thing as ours, just a different name. If they're involved, so now you've got outside country influence. Now you've got outside money influences. So I don't know who's exactly really at the top. But the middle of this pyramid is filling out like a motherfucker. It's so cool to see. So many cool people looking in and realizing, did you know that Ace Elevator won a contract just before? Oh, yeah, and Otis. Well, and suddenly the company that hired them was all. Someday it's going to make a great book and people are going to go, is this fiction? Or is this real?
7 years later, just a few months before 9/11, Ace Elevator workers began a full-scale elevator upgrade for both towers. The elevator shafts gave access to the main structural steel for the building and would have been a perfect opportunity to install demolition devices all over the entire core of the building, completely hidden from sight and unknown to workers and occupants within the towers. When the plane struck the towers, all the ACE elevator employees mysteriously vanished, instead of helping to operate the elevators and evacuate the buildings.
See, as I go through newer documentaries, you'll find out, like I say, it's like the branch. You come off the trunk, there's a big story. A big branch comes off that trunk. Okay, let's say that's the security in the building, period. And you think it's just the cameras, or it's just the elevator people, or it's just the William Rodriguez. And then you realize, oh, there's another branch coming off of there. Now, something I just learned just now with you doing this podcast right now, suddenly all the ACE elevator employees disappear on 9/11. Don't go to work that day. How many anomalies have to hit you in the fucking forehead before you just accept that you have been lied to? You're not wrong. You've been lied to. It's easier to accept that way. Take it. I tell people that all the time. You're not wrong, because we have the human ego, and you don't like being wrong, and it's not about being wrong and right. It's about being correct. What is correct? And you've been lied to, so you're incorrect. Learn this. I'm far removed. I can watch, it took a couple years for me as I would watch those videos of those buildings being demolished. And I'd go back and forth from the science of what I think was taking place, and you could see squibs and different things. But then my mind would quickly go to the people that were in the building at that moment. And I took some solace in realizing that if steel beams are being heaved 600 feet laterally in what's called a collapse, then you have to understand the amount of explosives in that building were devastating. And any human being was blinking 1 second and completely gone the next. No suffering whatsoever. Not even knowing. Maybe hearing a rumble below or above them, depending on the floor they're on. Maybe the building starts to sway. They have 2 or 3 seconds of fear, and then the explosive charges on their floor go off. There is a video of a human being. He was probably standing in the window trying to get air, and when the bombs started to go off on his floor, he's ejected. So it took me a while, the first couple of years, to say, like, man. And I'm sure you've seen or saw the videos of the people that were probably either scorching with too much heat or probably more smoke inhalation, not being able to breathe at all, and probably hanging near the edge of the window and then maybe passing out or maybe choosing to jump. Because I never talk about 9/11 without reminding myself and people like you that we're talking about a bunch of human beings that were made sacrificial lambs that day, so other powerful people in this world could further their agenda and have the majority of this country be afraid and say, yes, do it. Go kill them. Invade that country too. Just go. And shut off our fucking empathy and our caring and what matters, and that we're all the human species and this is a big, beautiful globe and people over there matter just as much as you and I. And the people that died on 9/11... It's 15 years now. I don't get emotional about it anymore, but I did. It was a couple of times I just sitting there. I remember sitting in my old house, staring at my computer alone, wondering why the world is completely not going to get this and they're not going to want to see it. And then realizing the suffering that went on that day. It sobers you up, but it also motivates you. If enough people know that this or Oklahoma City or 7/7 or the Gulf of Tonkin or a lot of these false flags are actually false flags, then it'll be less as a society and as a world to fall for them each time. And whatever they're trying to push through or get through, they're probably going to meet more resistance. That's why knowing that you were lied to about 9/11 is important. It's not about you having an epiphany and then skipping down the street with the I'm a twofer t-shirt on, like you just drank some Dr. Pepper and suddenly your life. You know what it's about? It's about your awareness, my awareness, everybody else's awareness is going to help fight ignorance. And the less ignorance we have, the better we're going to be. Knowledge is power. Ignorance has the word ignore in it. Will you ignore things forever? When people put documentaries like this together, and all they're doing is just pulling all the facts down and just putting them in the timeline, and you just go, seriously? That too? Wow, I didn't know that. And then you get to go Google it yourself and investigate everything. He's got a 911insideout.com. He's got a website. Go check him out. A couple more minutes, and then we'll wrap up the show here.
As they would typically do in emergencies. Like Stratasec, Ace Elevator also went bankrupt and dissolved shortly after 9/11.
Well, you can't exactly check their records if they don't exist anymore. How convenient is that?
Turner Construction, a huge mafia-connected construction firm in New York, did a lot of work inside the towers in the years leading up to 9/11, including several complete fireproofing upgrades on the same floors that would be hit by the airplanes on 9/11. The fireproofing in these...
Understand that if you were to take a picture of one of the buildings and then take the floors that you did the fire upgrades in, those 5 to 6 or 8 floors are exactly where the plane hit. Just another crazy coincidence.
Areas was applied double thick, so cordage could have easily been hidden beneath or even covered devices on key trusses. The final charges could have been placed and wired up the weekend before 9/11 during those unusual power downs and evacuations that were reported. The controlled demolition hypothesis is not outside the realm of possibilities once you've done the research. Especially when one considers Building 7, the third World Trade Center building which mysteriously collapsed late in the day on 9/11. World Trade Center 7's tenants included the FBI, Secret Service, and the Securities and Exchange Commission, or SEC, which investigates stock market and securities fraud.
Yeah, this is another one that I didn't know till later. You know, you think about the buildings collapsing, but then you got to think, okay, well, there was people in them. Okay, that's the second thing that comes to mind. What's the third thing? The third thing that comes to mind is what was being worked on at the SEC. All those filing cabinets and computers, what were they working on? Oh, they were just investigating Wall Street. Whole bunch of them. How do you make all those investigations disappear?
In 2001, the SEC and World Trade Center 7 was investigating Enron and WorldCom, the two largest security scandals of the time. Enron was a Madoff-style pyramid scheme, a fraudulent energy company which helped bankroll the Bush-Cheney run for the White House with over $2 million that it stole from its investors. While Bush and Cheney used office to deregulate the oil and gas industry in Enron's favor, starting as the governor in Texas and then moving to the White House. Luckily for their pals at Enron, everything required to prosecute those massive financial crimes was destroyed when World Trade Center 7 came crashing to the ground late in the day on 9/11. Now,
you think some of those guys that have been arrested for the Enron scandal are like seeing the first two buildings and they're going, dude, 7 needs to go. My file's on the 38th floor of the SEC. Come on, 7. He's like pacing back and forth all day. What's going on, man? And all of a sudden, Dan Rather goes, we're hearing reports that another building in that area might be having some structural issues. And he's like, yeah, baby, 7. He's like in Vegas. 7, baby. And all of a sudden, in 6.5 seconds, a perfectly healthy skyscraper comes a tumbling down into its own footprint.
Now, the government and a few stubborn defenders still try to hold on to the theory that Building 7 was somehow this anomaly in steel-framed high-rise building construction, as it is the only skyscraper that has ever suffered total spontaneous collapse by fire in 100 years of skyscraper construction worldwide. It fell through the path of most resistance at the rate of gravity. Now, the government lies all the time. The physics of freefall? Not so much. The top floors cannot fall through the entire structural resistance of a building as fast as they would free fall through air. Yet even NIST, the National Institute for Standards and Technology, was forced to admit that Building 7 did in fact fall at free fall acceleration.
Very important to understand that even NIST, the National Institute Standards and Technologies, the official word of your government, acknowledged that during its 7-second collapse, about 8 of the floors were moving at free fall. In other words, there was no resistance underneath. They weren't hitting anything. It's like they're falling right through the air. Well, how do you not have any resistance on floor 24 from floor 23? Floor 23 is right there, healthy as a horse. How come you just fell through it like it wasn't there? How did it just
poof, disappear. The only way you can do that is explosives, period. It's the only way physically, in the world of physics, in the world of conservation of momentum, that it can even come close to happening. The only explanation is demolition. Well, bringing down a 47-story skyscraper isn't exactly something easy to do. You don't just run in there and throw a few sticks of dynamite around. You got to know the structural makeup. You got to know where the columns are. You got to know which columns you want to blow. You got to know which floors you want to, blow it from the floor up, or do you want to blow it in the middle? Have the middle of the top come down and crush the bottom. There's a lot of different ways to design building collapse. You know how I know this? Because hey, I started learning about building collapse because I knew that wasn't a collapse. That was a demolition. And many people see it and go, what's Building 7? You know, Building 7's not even in the 9/11 official commission report at all. How many fucking anomalies is it going to take before David Spade takes a 2x4 to Tommy Boy's skull and wakes him the fuck up?
Random fires and even serious facade damage caused by the North Tower collapse cannot cause a building to fall so symmetrically and suddenly straight into itself at the rate of gravity. Multiple physics and engineering papers have been written on this subject and passed peer review. There is obviously another answer for why World Trade Center Building 7 collapsed the way it did on 9/11 and why the government continues to ignore it and pretend it knows nothing about it. Donald Rumsfeld has been asked what he thought about Building 7 more than once, and his responses have been most unusual.
What is Building 7? I have no idea. I've never heard that.
Never heard of Building 7.
No, I haven't. What's Building 7?
The woods away from
me. I gotta go.
Building 7 was where half of the cronies that you helped had their files and the SEC commission hearings that were going to go to fucking jail, and now your buddies are out. How convenient. FBI, see you later, bye. How many different agencies were in that? Alphabet agencies, you know? I think the CIA, that was their New York office. So anything they needed gone is gone. It's gone. 7 seconds, see you later, bye.
How could Rumsfeld not know about Building 7 when he and Dick Cheney were former board members of Salomon Smith Barney, which was by far the largest tenant inside of World Trade Center Building 7, with offices on all but 10 of the 47 floors, over 1.2 million square feet of office space? Donald Rumsfeld served as chairman of the SSB International Advisory Board since its first meeting in 1999. But had to resign in 2001 when he was confirmed as Bush's defense secretary. Cheney also resigned from the board upon becoming Bush's vice president around the same time. So Donald Rumsfeld obviously knows much more about Building 7 than he pretends to. There was one major reconstruction project that took place inside of World Trade Center Building 7 prior to 9/11 that we know of, which could have served as a time window for the planting of demolition devices. The construction of the Office of Emergency Management, built by Mayor Rudy Giuliani on the 23rd floor. Months of renovation work on multiple floors were required to build this full-scale FEMA safe room and control center, which had its own independent air and water supply, as well as blast-resistant siding and windows. Directly overlooking the entire World Trade Center complex, it was positioned to have a bird's-eye view of the scene. However, on 9/11, the OEM command center in Building 7 was never even used. Building 7 was evacuated at 9 a.m. that morning. Giuliani had insisted on setting up this bunker in Building 7 and went against all advice to place his command center there. Although the perfect vantage point to oversee an attack on New York City's number one terrorist target, it was apparently a little too close to the action, and Giuliani was advised to abandon it, and he instead spent the day walking around the streets around Ground Zero with the fire and police commissioner and a flock of reporters in tow. Giuliani's first orders to the media and officials were to evacuate all of southern Manhattan south of Canal Street. Police Commissioner Bernard Kerik, Giuliani's right-hand man on 9/11, would later be convicted of felony fraud and conspiracy charges and serve 4 years in prison for an unrelated case. Kerik's department was also the one that found that remarkably undamaged hijacker's passport on the sidewalk after the plane struck.
I think I'm going to end it there.
for today. I laughed when you can't help but laugh and realize how dumb our country is and how they don't care. If they did care, could they even want to walk up to this trough and drink? I don't know, to be honest with you. I think it's much safer for them to just think that the guy in that house and the people in that big building are here to protect us, and God bless America, we're the greatest place on earth to live, and, you know, here's my flag, that's where I go to church, that's where my two kids go to school, that's my second car we're making a payment on. You know what? Okay, I get it. Because not everyone is built for this kind of stuff. Think about what, in the last hour, just bouncing back and forth during this, how many more connections of dots there have been since the very, very beginning, and I think it was probably Terry Masson in La Pentagate, first guy to put pictures of the Pentagon, the original pictures taken real quick from some photographers, you know, there's grass is pristine, there's only a tiny hole in the Pentagon. You don't see any, you know, fuselage or vertical tail or, you know, giant landing gear, you know, obviously the big rows of blue seats. You don't see people, you don't see anything. You just see a small hole in the building. It looks like something like a missile went through it or something. The very first couple of times I looked at those photos, I kept saying to myself, okay, well, this was probably, you know, that maybe it hit on the other side. I knew nothing about, all I know is a plane hit the Pentagon. And then the next day in the newspaper, what happens? You see the big chunk of the Pentagon missing. That actually collapsed 45 minutes after the initial impact of whatever that was. I don't think it was a big plane. Pretty darn sure it was not. But again, think about the people that were in there. What were they working on? Oh, yeah, $2.3 trillion missing dollars in Pentagon expenditures. So it's a cesspool of snakes. Everybody knows it, and nobody cares. That's Washington, D.C. That's why they do the most coke. That's why they drink the most. That's why, according to a survey, most of the kinkiest, and by the way, I don't care what you do in your sex life. That's cool. But most of the kinky, really kinky fuckers, are in Washington, D.C. It literally is Sodom and Gomorrah, or, I don't know, some bad city in some biblical book. It's nasty. Where everyone has a fake smile and a fake handshake, and the moment they meet someone, they have one of their staff investigate them. They're all paranoid. None will talk. They all whisper that they know that that day is complete and utter bullshit, but they're inside the machine and they have a fancy house and they make $125,000 a year and people call them sir and ma'am and they drive around in limousines and you know what? That's what they've chosen. The rest of us out here, the ones who think, okay, I get a certain amount of scumbaggishness in government. But once it starts to really rain shit down on the rest of us and things just get worse and worse and worse, eventually we'll speak up. And I think that's what's happening in our country right now. There's too many podcasts and broadcasts and blogs and new news stations. And you know, just everywhere I look, someone's doing something about something, saying something about it, showing up at about, educating people about it. And knowledge is power, and it is spreading everywhere and all directions, and I want to leave you with that. We're going to see some really good changes in the world in the next decade. And right now, they're just little blips on the radar screen, but when they really take off, when the green energy that we can produce here on planet Earth and is cyclical in nature and is truly doesn't have an empty logo, it will never run out of it. Then you're going to see no more of these bullshit wars for oil. You're not going to see the geopolitics you see right now. You're going to see something that's going to be far different, and it will be about local prosperity. But there'll be partnerships. There'll be businesses. But I think it's just going to happen locally. You know, it's like a plane, instead of just dropping one seed, that's 9/11, flies over and drops 100,000 seeds, and every single one of those is a big, beautiful pine tree. And that's what I think's coming. But it's going to get a little bit worse first. I don't know how bad.
but I know it's going to get a little worse first. And I'm not like I'm not saying I'm happy about that, because I'm not happy about it. But I also see how, you know, you look at the timelines of history, you look at what happened to Greece, you look at what happened to Rome, you look at what happened to Mesopotamia, you look into all the different cultures, and you see the same storyline. They start with basically nothing, they build it up into an empire, or at least something that's like really prosperous for its time. Better running water or toilets or a library, and people can go in and learn to read and write, and societies advance. And then they get greedy and they get bloated, they get full of their own shit, and they try to take other people over, and then they print money, and then they, oh, then their money was worth less and less, and then they collapse on their own fake little bullshit. And then a couple thousand years later, it happens again. Well, it's going to happen again. But this time, since so many of us are communicating so quickly, you already have some options to jump to, like a Bitcoin. Perfect example. And you're going to see a lot of that. You're going to see a lot of digital currencies. And if as long as there's lots of them, I'm all about it. But the moment it gets down to two, three, and that's it, fuck them. They win again. Because that's how they consolidate power. They consolidate power by simply, simple. I used to go to First Union Bank. Then I'd go to Wachovia Bank. Now I go to Wells Fargo Bank. No, I don't. Fuck you, Wells Fargo. No, my money is here locally in a local bank. But that's consolidation of wealth and power. They do it with the oil companies. There used to be 50, 60 of them. Now there's four or five. They did it with the banks. And eventually, their world will cave in, because we'll push back and say, no, we don't need to play your game anymore. We can gather our own water. Look at the indoor garden in Chicago. It's massive indoors. And they use solar panels to power the lights on the inside, and they are growing veggies by the tonnage in the middle of winter in Chicago. That's game-changing. Because if you can grow your own food, get your own water, have your own shelter, what the fuck do you need them for? And they want you, like George Carlin said, they want you to keep going to those jobs. Well, the world's going to change because they're pushing too much. They're getting too greedy. They're getting too fat. They're getting too bloated. And again, they're going to collapse under their own weight. And I love the fact that I can just go back in history and go, wow. When that Roman coin started off, it was worth a certain amount. And then it had so much tin in it, people wouldn't even pick it off the ground. Do you know it costs 2 cents to make a penny in America? America, fuck yeah! All right, guys, I'll talk to you next week. Thanks for checking us out. And have a good week.